Hello, welcome everybody to episode 3 of my show 74 once more. My name is Dieter Kalt and I am your host. Today's guest is Kirk Fury, a good friend of mine, a former hockey player. Comes from Canada, from a beautiful city in Canada, and started his career playing junior hockey in the OHL, then university hockey, then pro hockey in the East Coast Hockey League and the AHL before he moved over to pro. So proceed with his career in Europe, in Germany, in the DEL, and then ended up in Austria playing for many years in the Austrian Professional Hockey League. And now he's a coach, he's a mentor, he's a father, he has a long and illustrious career behind him, won a couple championships on the way. And I would like to introduce you to Kirk Fury, like I said, and hand the mic over to him. Hello, welcome to my show. Thank you for putting up the time to talk to me, Kirk. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Dieter. I really appreciate it.
So let me hear a little bit about your story, where you came from, how you grew up, and how you ended up coaching in Europe.
Well, I come from a town of it's called Glace Bay, Nova Scotia. I like to call it God's country, but grew up with a family of I have one brother and two sisters, and I like to believe I grew up in a pretty solid household, and was given some pretty good morals and values from my parents. And so just hockey's been, I have to be quite honest, hockey's been my life. But with that being said, it's brought a lot of intangibles to my life, or also tangible things to my life that I'm pretty appreciative of. So like I said, I've always played hockey. Also grew up playing baseball, loved to play golf, and played minor hockey in Glace Bay. Had some great coaches there, and was given an opportunity at the age of 16 to play for a travel team that gave me opportunities to be scouted in hockey, and to be given the opportunity, like you said, to be drafted to the OHL, which, you know, at that time was a dream come true. And so I had that opportunity, and decided to go to leave home, and which wasn't an easy thing at the time. But it was something I was passionate about, something I wanted to do. And so decided to uproot and went to Ontario, and had a great experience there for three to four years. And then it didn't quite work out at the time to be able to get an opportunity to play pro hockey. So I had to start looking at, the university route and getting an education. And fortunately, again, I was able to match schooling with hockey, which in my opinion is a great opportunity to be able to put both together and to still potentially have the opportunity to move on with hockey. And I was able to do that and get an opportunity from a friend of mine, Cale McLean, who's now coaching, and he got me in touch with the coach, and it was just kind of, let's just give it a crack and see if we can play pro hockey. And that really was the goal. I knew that potentially it might not work out, but you never want to say what if. And so I gave it a crack, and was able to make the team in the East Coast Hockey League. And My mindset at the time was that I was going to try to play pro hockey. If it worked out and it looked like it was kind of progressing in the right direction, then I would continue to do it. If not, then I would use my education and go out into the so-called real world. It just progressed well. I had some really good support, some good coaches, and I got the opportunity to play in the American Hockey League, which again was another dream come true, because in my hometown, or just outside my hometown, we had an American Hockey League team. And that was kind of something that I remember going home and saying to my sister, I'm going to play there someday. And it was a reach, but it was something that I was passionate about and had hoped that it would happen. And fortunately it did happen. And then I had an opportunity while playing in the American Hockey League to look at, it was kind of a crossroads for me, and to look at going to Europe. I had an offer, but I also had an offer from an NHL team that gave me potentially opportunity to sign an NHL contract, and probably one of the toughest things I ever had to do, but there was a lockout at the time, and talked to some friends and they kind of said, it doesn't look like they were going to go back, and they ended up being right. They were completely locked out. So I took the opportunity to come to Europe, and which was moved me into a great part of my life, because by coming to Europe, I met my wife, who's from Winnipeg, Manitoba, but I met her in Germany. So it was kind of one of those things, I think, that was meant to be. Although I passed up an opportunity to potentially sign an NHL contract, did that mean you're going to play? No, but I think things worked out pretty good, and was able to meet my wife in Iserlo in Germany. I previously signed in Kassel, Germany, played 1 year there and then 2 years in Iserlo. And then the opportunity came to come to Austria and to come to Klagenfurt. We call Klagenfurt home now. Although Glace Bay is, and we are from Canada and we're proud to be from there, we've been here for 12 years now, and my kids are born here, and just a lot of really good things have happened since we've come to Austria. A place that we love, we enjoy. At this moment, we visit Canada, and like I said, Austria's home. So the coaching side of it was something as a player. I said I would never do coaching as a career. I was given an opportunity, like anybody, when your family's involved, you make decisions that involve the entire group, not just yourself. So it gave us an opportunity. Well, at the end of my career, I was given the opportunity to start coaching with the first team. And I took the opportunity. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It wasn't something that I really thought about, but I thought about it from my family side, and it kept me in the game. And so I knew the environment. It was something that just ended up, we talked about, my wife and I, and it was something we'd give it a crack. 4 years later, still coaching. I've had the opportunity to coach at different levels, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity. And I can be honest, it's something I am very passionate about. I extremely love, and it was probably the best decision I could have ever made. I definitely have to be honest that managing my time, because I'm so passionate about it and want to learn more and more, I really have to be better at managing my time between my work and my family. But in the end, it's pretty long-winded about myself, but the coaching side of it, the most rewarding thing about coaching for me is being able to try to pass on things that you learn throughout your career, trying to help players get better every day, and just seeing a change, whether that be a big change or a small change, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, when you see a player and you try to educate them, you try to help them, and you show them stuff, and maybe today they don't see it, tomorrow they don't see it, maybe next week they don't see it, but then they kind of get it, and they realize it. It's not really about yourself. It's more the reward of seeing somebody else being, enjoying the progression, seeing that they've learned something, and them seeing that. And that's the biggest reward of coaching. And I'm just extremely, extremely grateful for every opportunity that I got. And at the end of the day, as I said at the beginning, if not for hockey, I've met a lot of great people along the way. I met people from around the world, and without the sport, I would not have had those opportunities. And again, I'm just something that it's really dear to my and close to my heart that I am really, really appreciative of.
Well, thank you very much for that interview. It was great listening to your life story. No, but that's awesome. That's great stuff. There's many, I didn't want to interrupt you because there was many things that popped up in my mind. I really want to ask you about that. But you know, that listening to you, that's pure passion coming out from you. And that what defines you, what defined you as a player. That's how I got to know you. And now you're still that as a coach, but that's something I really want to talk about a little later. You mentioned a couple things. Growing up in Canada as a junior player, you had to move away from home to pursue your dream when you were like 15, 16, around that age. Mm-hmm. So you managed to do that, to overcome that. And for sure, there was the mental part of it was really tough. But then again, you had to make a decision when you decided to pursue university education and play hockey at the same time. So you did that. That was a really smart move. But then again, you were on the crossroad, you know, should I sign this contract? You know, it sounds good on paper, NHL, you know, that's the biggest dream of every hockey kid in the world, but really insecure. And there was those tough circumstances with the NHL lockout. Nobody played and nobody knew how long it's going to take. So you made the decision to jump over the big lake and come to Europe again. So giving up one dream or making a big decision led it to Europe, where, like you said, you met your beautiful wife. And everything, your life took, a swing in a different direction. So this is kind of the story of your life so far. You came to Austria, and then you said, oh, no, coaching. Oh, no. Oh, my God, coaching. All those coaches I had, you know, some great ones, but the other ones, I didn't really want to deal with that anymore. And I hear that story from a lot of guys that actually became great coaches, and they absolutely loved it. That they started like, oh my God, something I never do in my life is coaching. And, you know, they're the best coaches I ever had where I worked together with. But what I'm really interested in, when was that time when you start to really think about, all right, you know, Kirk, I'm turning 34, 35, 36. How long will I be able to play and what's coming after that? You know, when was that time that you really started thinking about what's next?
I had a goal, when I started in Europe, and that was to play till I was 35, and I always had in my head, especially when my family was in the picture, if we couldn't make it function, then we had to look at something else. So 35 was the number. That was my number before actually I was, that's maybe when I started my first couple of years in Europe. That I want to play till I was 35. If I could play till I was 35, that was great. And then after that was kind of a bonus, but everything had to kind of fall into place. It had to work for the family. It had to work. Was I playing just to play, or was I playing for it to be able to really put food on the table? Was I sacrificing a career in something else or starting a career in something else, just because I love to play hockey? And so 35, like I said, was the number for me. And then it just kind of, we would always reevaluate it when the time came, and I was really fortunate to be able to play when I was 39. So, and then at that time we kind of saw the writing on the wall, and that's where it became, okay, yes, I could still play. I had options to still play, but it wasn't enough to sacrifice the next step of my journey. And so then I had to think about, okay, were we going to go back to Canada? We really like it here. And it just kind of fell into my lap. It wasn't something I looked for. And so that's really the plan where I really started to think about it. I was fortunate when I played in Klagenfurt to have 2-year contracts. So you always had a couple of years to kind of. And you always had one buffer year, I guess you'd call it. And then the next year before you signed, it would be, okay, now what's the next, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking we still want to continue on? And so that's for me how we kind of proceeded with how we were going to move on to the next stage.
So because of the organization in Klagenfurt and how much they respected you, they gave you a chance to jump into coaching, into pro coaching right away. Was that something, did you have some kind of education before you started, or just that the huge education of, you know, being actually a player and progressing over like 25 years of pro hockey?
Yeah, it was just that education that I had. And then when I decided to make that decision, I decided to go and get my coaching education in Canada. I went back there and did that in the summer after my last season of playing, excuse me. Otherwise it was more of just, I'm a guy that I'm a guy that I think a lot about stuff. I don't just kind of, I feel anyhow that I don't just kind of say stuff to say it to players. And I want players to feel the way I would have wanted felt. And so that's kind of the education that I think is most valuable. And I think that's fair to say for anything, that your education comes from your own experiences. And typically your education comes from your failures, not from your successes. Sometimes from your successes, absolutely. But you really find out through that adversity and how you dealt with those situations to really be able to educate yourself. That's my opinion. Yeah. So accept it. So failing at times or failing actually quite a bit is not a bad thing, because now we can learn how we're going to kind of get better at it. And so that's kind of what my philosophy is in coaching is I want to think about, if I talk to a player, how are they feeling? Is it a personal thing? Is it an on ice thing? And so for me, that's the education that I try to not only try to take from my playing career, but I try to put in to the players.
You think that talking about failure, and I think that was a really important point, that agree 100% with that you learn from your failures much more than you learn from your victories. Like you said, of course you learn from your victories, but falling on your nose, getting punched in the face, and then getting up again and drawing the right conclusions from that, I think that's even more important. So obviously that's something that a professional or successful athlete has to have within him, some kind of, you know, to in order to move up in the ranks. Or is it something you can learn? What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's something you can learn. I absolutely think that type of stuff is, because at the end of the day, through sport and everything like that, and through playing, you're in those situations quite often where you're falling on your face, where you're every day you're in competition. But I try to extract that it's the sport and that we're people. And so that I believe that anybody and anything that you do, it's the same type of thing. So I believe it is something that you can learn. Yeah. Being in the moment is the best education, in my opinion. But to answer your question, yes, I believe it's something that you can learn.
So how important is the coach? How important is the coach when you're young? How important is the coach on the way? And how important is the coach once you turn pro?
I think they're, as you said before, there's coaches you remember and there's coaches you don't remember. Or there's coaches you remember and there's coaches you choose not to remember. Maybe. And for me, and this is just my experience, and is that I think the coach is so important. But I don't know if the coach is so important for maybe the tactical things. I don't know if the coach is so important for skill development. Yes, he is important for that stuff, 100%. But for me, the coach is the most important, is understanding the person. And that's where, for me, it's the most important thing, because I can throw a tactical stuff at a player. I can throw skill development at a player. But at the end of the day, if he doesn't want to do it, and I can't make him feel that he wants to do it or make him feel good about doing it, then he feels that he's just doing it because he has to do it. So that's where my thing is, that I feel the coach is very important. Yes, the other stuff is important also, but I think the process to get to those other things, to get the maximum out of a player, you need to start by building a relationship with those players, letting the players know, and this is a word that I use a lot, that I genuinely care about them. And that's at the end of the day, but that's not just sport. That's just hockey. I'm starting to realize, and I, again, it's a bit long winded, but when I was playing hockey, everybody said, wait till you get to the real world. You know, you're an athlete.
You hear that quite a bit, right?
Yeah. You get up in the morning, you go to practice, you're done at noon or you're done at one. Yeah. It's a great life. Absolutely. It is. But for me, when I started to talk to more people outside of the sport and in the quote unquote real world, the adversity that you go through as an athlete is quite intense. That's not to discredit anybody that from any other career, any other job, but it's quite a bit. And that's why I say that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we do. People have to know that when you're working with each other or for each other, or if it's a so-called leader of the group, that they care about everybody, that they genuinely care about everybody. And I can say to you right now that I care about you, but if I don't, and I'm saying it, I'm a firm believer that people know that. And so for me, that's where your energy and how your body language is, it shines through. Even though in my head, I think something different, if I think it, I have to tell you it. And so if I feel it, I have an issue. If I'm in one room and I'm saying not good things and I go to the other room where you are and I say the opposite, you know, people know. And so that's where I believe that the coach is so important. That's where I believe the coach is so important. And that's why I believe a coach is important.
Well, that's powerful stuff, really. That because I agree 100%. I agree 100%. That's something that we actually talked about quite a bit. The more you give, you the more you get back. Is that something that we could use as a quote?
I think 100%. I think 100%. And I think that people say they want to give and don't want to get back. But again, I think that people aren't being honest when they say that. I think they're always looking to get back. Not always, and then not everybody, because it's my example is the news. When you turn the news on, you don't hear about all the good stories in the world. You hear about a lot of the not so good stories. And so I think that there's a lot more good people out there and there's a lot more people, but I think that some people are not honest about that we genuinely want to give. That yeah. you want to give and you want somebody. And the best feeling is that when somebody, it's not that you're looking to get back, but you see the joy in somebody's face. That's what really makes people feel, well, at least in my opinion, that's what I feel that people yeah. should be like that. So anyhow.
So jumping into coaching, pretty much not overnight, but you know, pretty much overnight mm-hmm. without huge preparation. Was it everything that you thought it would be? And what was the biggest challenge for you to start with?
The biggest challenge for me was that it's a different demand than as a player. It's not physically demanding in terms of your training and your preparation that way, but it's definitely in terms of time. With coaching, you're always preparing. Always preparing, and the way I approach it is that when you're a player, although you're in a team, you have to do your part to help the team to be successful. So you have to really focus on what you're doing and how you're taking care of yourself and do it. When you're a coach, you're managing 20 or to 25 players. So the amount of time it takes, it's a different demand. And so that's the biggest, that has been the biggest challenge, if you will. I say a challenge, but I'm sitting in the office right now and there's not a day I can honestly say that I wake up and I don't want to come. There's not a day. So as time consuming or as much time as it takes, but I think that that's the give and the take thing. If you give and you do your job, I think things will work out in the end. That's what I believe. So that was to answer your question, that was the the biggest challenge was, and I'm still challenged, I'm still trying to work with it. And that's the time that you have to put in every day.
Yeah. So there's not so much energy left sometimes for other stuff. So what does the family say to that life? Well, they're used to the player's lifestyle, but are they getting, or did they get used to the coaching lifestyle already?
No, not completely, to be honest. That's on me, because I need to sometimes say no too. And so I have to put away stuff, but I like to believe, and I hope, and at the end of the day, I say, I hope, but it's me that has to do that. And that as I become a little bit more experienced in this area, because 20 years of playing hockey of playing so-called every day of your life, being a professional or trying to be a professional, I'm only 4 years of being a coach. So that's pretty young in terms of experience. So you're always trying to build something, build more, necessarily more, but maybe changing things. So you're always thinking and yeah, it's for me, I really have to learn to manage my time better where I put it away. And mm-hmm. I really put it away and then focus that's my family time. And this is my work time. Right now the season is over. So it's a little bit better. But throughout the season, for sure, I think it's something that I have to work on to be better, because I definitely see, you know, my son's a guy that a boy that spends almost every day at the rink, and he loves it. He loves it. I don't force him to come with me. I ask him if he would like to. My daughter's not at the rink. So I think the writing's on the wall that if I'm at the rink a lot, I'm probably not spending a lot of time with my daughter, which really, that does hurt me. So it's something I definitely have to be better at, because they support me. That's the thing. They're supporting my career. So I need to be better at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's an issue. Talking to some of our friends and former colleagues about the biggest change. What is the biggest change from being a player to becoming a coach? I just give you a little, you know, some guys were saying, you know, structure, man, structure. I was used to getting up in the morning, and I know I had to be mentally and physically ready. But the rest of the planning was done for me all the time. So now suddenly I wake up in the morning and nobody tells me anything. I am the guy responsible. Is that something that is hard for you too? Or is it something that you're struggling with too?
I wouldn't say I struggle with it. We always say, well, I don't know if saying other things, but I think it might be athletes. I want to say hockey players, but we say we're creatures of habit. And that's the routine, as you said, from a player. I'm a routine person. I like routine. So from that part, now finding an exact routine, I think is something I'm still working at. You know, I come in, for instance, right now, I would like to have things a little bit, be able to go a little bit smoother. Unfortunately, that's not the case, but I don't really, for me, that it's just a different routine. That's all. It's like we say, I believe an athlete doesn't work a so-called 8-hour a day job, but I feel that my opinion is the energy or the work that they put in for 4 hours or a game equals an 8-hour day from somebody that works a 40-hour a week job. So that there was a transition there, because your hours are longer, as you know. You're managing more people. And so, but I feel that I do have some structure, but again, because I'm young at this, my structure isn't fixed to where it's just a little bit of an alter here and there. It is, but it can for sure get better. And so, yeah, it's it's just trying to fine tune it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's something that comes with time, maybe.
Yeah.
Now let's look into what you're doing exactly at the moment. You know, you're coaching with professionals or for professionals or young professionals or guys that want to become professionals and still go to school, for example. So there is a really young team playing in a professional hockey league, the Alps Hockey League in Austria, combining Italy and Austria in the same league, and even Slovenia. So you're supposed to prepare the young guns to become professional. So what are the biggest challenges there for you? Since, you know, really developing and even in a competitive second league in Austria, where also a lot of teams play to win and to entertain their crowds, you know, and now you're in there with a young team and trying to develop. It's totally different starting point. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
Well, I think that, as you said, you're teaching them to be professionals. So they don't know, some know, have a routine. Others are coming from a younger age group that it's some, and I use the word hobby, and I don't mean in any disrespect to it, but there's a difference between being a professional and being somebody that just likes to play. And so that's something that we have to teach them, that there's, and I have to say this, is that when we teach them this stuff, it's not just for hockey. We're teaching them because we know that to become a professional athlete, the percentages are extremely slow, extremely low. But what we do know is that everybody will become a professional at something. So if we can teach them the qualities, what it is to be a professional every day, I think that that's the first and foremost, with the details of that. And then within all of that stuff, we're teaching them, as you said, we're in a professional league with other teams that want to win. But we have to be honest that we also have to teach them that they want to win too. So what is it? What does it take to do that? And that's part of the process of being a professional. It's definitely something this year that we had to change the mindset. We had to change the mindset that there are stumbling blocks, that there are times you're going to stumble. But again, as you talked about it, you get punched in the face. You have to get back up regardless. It doesn't matter. And I think over time, you teach those people to be resilient. You teach them to go through adversity. And then when it comes to them again, that these guys will just automatically bounce back up. And so I think that's something that we've worked on this year. And now with this group of players, we have a core now that feels that way and that they believe in themselves. And again, that comes down to what I've just said about the person. Yeah. And at the end of the day, you're coaching a person.
So that's there's a lot of emotions behind, you know, like you said, you really have to care for the guys, especially you have young guys who are, you know, fighting with a lot of other different emotional issues every day. That's exhausting too for a coach, I would imagine. But, you know, is that something that's the way coaching is developing with the generation of kids coming up now? That's the way you have to be, you know? Because when I grew up, you know, it was like, okay, the coach said jump, and then you jumped, you know, and you had to take a lot of criticism too. And it was more like harsher, so to speak, you know, being influenced from more the eastern part of Europe, that coaching style. But nowadays, things are different. And how are they different?
It's a book that I haven't read, but I believe it's called The IY Generation. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, if you're not willing, coaching at a professional level is not something that usually lasts very long. I got a lot of things going through my head right now about the coaching, because I'm not somebody that so far has read so much about other sports, but I know that that's something that's very valuable. And the reason I say that is because we talk about coaches nowadays. You see a coach like John Cooper, who's in with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he just signed another extension. And the word out there is how he treats his players. How he communication is a huge thing. The care factor is a huge thing. I believe my philosophy is I can be hard on you, but you have to have a reason why I'm hard on you. Not just because I said, that's the way it is. That's not good enough. You need to know why it is. I have to tell you that if you do it this way, I have to give you some room to breathe. It doesn't have to be, I'm not the boss. I'm only the guy that has to lead a structure so that everybody, because there's so many people, but I'm not the boss. We're in it together. And I believe that with this generation, if you don't, I was that generation. And I believe that's why I can understand it. It's because I use my mom, and if my mom won't watch this, but when I would ask my mom why, when she would say that this is this, okay, why? Because it is.
Yeah.
But because it is, isn't a good enough answer. There has to be layers. And if I don't know the answer, I have to find it for them. But I have to be honest. I have to tell them that I don't know the answer, but I'll try to find it and I'll get back to you on it. And that's the thing about this generation that, yes, in my opinion, the days of yelling and screaming, I can yell at them. Yes, absolutely. I can yell at players. But they have to understand again that I care, that I mean it, that it's not just because...
Not for sure.
That I'm not just doing it because I told you to do it like this and you don't, I think you understand what I mean. It's just, that's what we have. And if you're not willing to adapt to it, you're stubborn, you're not willing to change. And that doesn't work now, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, if you look back at all the coaches you had, was that a big influence, or is there anybody who really influenced you, like a role model? Let's say if I ever become a coach or a dad or, you know, some kind of leader or teacher, I think this guy, he had it figured out.
I think that I had a few coaches, and they're the ones that I remember that respected players. I always use this as an example. The coach that communicated to me and brought me in his room and talked to me as a person, but he could still yell at me. He could still hold me accountable in front of everybody. But I knew he respected me. And he was the guy that had reason behind what he was doing. And I really liked the coach that could give you crap the night before and the next day come in and always said hi to you. Didn't matter. Not just because, but he meant it. And those are the guys that really stuck out for me. And I know there was Fraser McGregor, who was the coach in my hometown. And he yelled at me and he gave me the old ma. I was a defenseman. And he told me, if you go up the ice 100 miles an hour, you better come back 150 miles an hour. And it's something I really remember. And he's a good person. And he was a minor hockey league coach and he sticks out. I had my brother. My brother was a huge, huge support for me. But again, he respected me and he saw something and he probably was harder on me than anybody. But again, he loved me and he respected me. My first pro coach was Mike Havlin. Again, really hard, yelled a lot, but not necessarily at the players all the time, held them accountable. But at the end, and when he walked into the rink the next day, everything was new. But everything was new. John Stevens was another guy that sticks out in my mind. Just a good person, just a really good person. And Manny Viveros helped me a lot also. And Manny was a person that talked to me a lot. And just, I think it's those type of guys. but I'm no different than anybody else. We all have somebody that sticks out because that's what you liked. And so for me, that's what it was. I don't know if it's the same for anybody else, but that's the way I want to coach players. Is I want them to know I can hold them accountable, but I care about them and that they're people at the end of the day.
So, you know, throughout this interview, we've been talking about your career and your progression. And I talked about also about that change from being a player to becoming a coach, like the next step. When did you start thinking about? And I was really trying to hear from you, like many other guys, I was worried and I was afraid. But it looks like, you know, what I really like is what it sticks out for me is you're not looking back. Whatever happens, you know, in the past is the past, but now you're in the moment and it's so much more important. Okay, what's good for me, what's good for my family, and the next step. And that's something that's really extraordinary, I think, because many other people I talk to, they would talk a lot more about, okay, the feeling, you know, missing that being a player or missing the feeling that they had and really struggling with letting go of the identity that they had being an athlete. So, and I don't get the feeling that's the case with you.
Yeah, no, I definitely had, there was one time I remember, and I was in Klagenfurt and I can't remember if I was 35 or 36 maybe. And it was before my last contract and I went in to change my clothes and I just stood there and I had one of those moments where, oh my God, what am I going to do? It was just a moment. And I don't know what happened, to be honest, if it was that as I started to get closer to doing something else, maybe I started to talk to more people. And as I said, that I started to realize the adversities that you go through as an athlete really helped. We're really going to help moving forward. Being involved in a team all the time and really being there for your team and really doing things as a team, we're really going to help in the next step. And so I kind of started to maybe think about that a little bit more. And so it didn't really, wasn't really so worried about it. I figured it sounds maybe a little bit not so planned, but that I was going to do something. And in terms of looking back, I don't look back. I don't look back because I got a great family. I got a great wife. Are things perfect all the time? Absolutely not. But they're never going to be perfect. And so I could look back and say, why didn't I take the contract to go to try to make it to the NHL? But there's so many good things that have happened that the things that weren't so good, I learned from them, I think. And, and I want to be surrounded by good things. I just want to be, we do this thing once. And so why worry about, there's moments, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that everything is always so perfect, but to hang on to it for too long, it's for me, just not worth it. It's just not worth it. So, and so that's why I don't look back and say the what if. And I guess maybe it goes back to talking about trying to play in the East Coast Hockey League and just trying it and see if I could do it to prove to myself at the end of the day was kind of what I wanted to see, and not knowing where it was going to go. But I don't look back, and I guess I'm kind of proud of that, but I don't really think about it either.
Yeah. Well, that's just something that's in you, obviously. But I got two more questions for you. Talking about failure, what do you feel was the biggest failure or the biggest obstacle you had to overcome and throughout your career or in your life so far? And how did you overcome it?
Oh, I want to say one of the biggest obstacles, but I don't know if I could consider it an obstacle, but I think, can I say it more of a life-changing thing of it?
Please.
It was my dad passing away. My dad passing away, and maybe I believe things happen for a reason, and maybe I was a little bit, we talk about not thinking about what had happened, but maybe it's been such a long time now that I don't remember how that, like, that I was a little bit more like that. But when my dad passed away, it put everything into perspective for me, put a lot of stuff into perspective. And a lot of things, certain things happened, and I won't get too personal, maybe too personal about it, but actually I will, because I'm just an honest person. My hair, as you can see, whoever's watching this, that's something that kind of came about after, when my dad passed away. So and that was kind of something that for most people would be something that would kind of bother you. And I can understand that. This is what I have now. This disease is not, it's not life threatening. It's nothing. It's more of a cosmetic thing. And it's called alopecia. But I always say that if that, and my dad hadn't passed away and that had happened, I maybe would have dealt with it differently. But I really, knowing that it wasn't a health issue, I wasn't concerned about it. I met my wife almost 1 year to the day after my dad passed away. And so I think that that was a, I say life-changing, but that's a pretty strong thing to say. But I think a lot of really, 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 really good things have happened in my life since that adversity came into my life. Because my dad passed away very suddenly. It was very, very sudden. So I think that that was a moment that really was the, like I said, I don't know if I look at it as a hurdle as much as put life into perspective for me. That's really, I think, what it did.
Is that like, can you see, like, instead of being full of fear of anything, that any problems you might run into, it's more like it helped you learn to embrace your fear, because so many good things come out of, you know, running into problems and dealing with it.
I think 100%, that's absolutely accurate. I think that it shortens, I always say to players that when crappy things happen or things that aren't so good happen, really try to shorten the amount of time you focus on it, because you're wasting time that you can use to get better at something else or to be positive about something. And I really think that that probably, I think you're accurate with your assessment there, because it can, like, how bad is it really? How bad it can't be that bad. And so we deal with it and we move forward. And so I think that just that, yeah, I think you're absolutely accurate with that assessment, that's what that moment, I think, did for me.
Yeah. Well, if I think about myself as a coach, for example, if I could teach that to my kids or to anybody who is in my group, for example, well, then my job as a coach is pretty much done, because they're going to be prepared for anything that comes up. If they're going to be professionals or not, it doesn't matter. I help them reach their goals anyway. But, you know, that's something that you take with your whole life, that kind of a mental approach. So where do you see yourself in 5 years, Kirk?
Where do I see myself in 5 years? Yeah.
What's your dream? What are you dreaming about?
Well, people ask me this question all the time, and I obviously want to be the best coach that I can be. My thing is that, and would I like to coach at the highest level possible? Yes, absolutely. I would. And I will strive to do that stuff in 5 years. Oh, I see myself being a coach, and that's what I see myself doing. Where that brings me, or that I don't foresee that, but I'm a big believer that options will come. situations will present itself. If every day I come to work and I come to do my job and I really truly want to get better and I want to help people, I believe that, in 5 years I'll be a coach. And am I great at it? No, but I think I do have something that I can offer to help players. And so the passion is the biggest thing about it. And so that's where I see myself in 5 years coaching. Where exactly?
You're too humble. You're too humble, Kirk. And I keep telling you that, you know, you're going to be a great coach. Well, so listen up, guys, everybody's listening and watching this. There's a big time coach coming up here with all the passion he's got and he's learning. So watch out for the name Kirk Fury. He's going to be great. He's going to be great. And I really mean that, Kirk. I really appreciate all the insight that you gave us about your personal life, about your upcoming, and about how you see coaching and being really humble about everything. I think there was a lot of things I totally agree with you. And I would really like, I'm really looking forward to watching you grow as a coach. And I have one last question for you before we conclude this interview. What's success to you?
Consistency. Success to me is consistency, because I think consistency breeds success. And the reason I say that is because in what we do, I'm not going to win championships every year. I'm not going to be number one every year. But if my routine and I'm willing to get better every day and it's consistent, then I think you will be successful. That's the biggest thing for me of what success is. Success isn't about how much money I make. Success isn't about how many wins or losses I have. Success is about being consistent, and that everything goes into that. And that's a pretty quick question. So I actually have a second part to the success. Success is when people walk out the door and they're happy about what they've done when they leave. And I'm relating it to coaching. So if guys leave the rink and they're happy at the end of the day, that's pretty much what's really is another part of success for me also.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time, Kirk. I really appreciate it. And all the best for the rest of the season. And I'll be following your coaching career. So the next time we're going to talk on this show, you might be coaching the New York Rangers already. So let's see about that. I wish you all the best. Well, Don't say no.
I really appreciate you having me, Dieter. I think this is a great thing that you're doing with your podcast. I wish you all the best. And to all his viewers, great person, so keep viewing.
All right, stay tuned. Bye-bye.